You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. For millennia, animals, both wild and domestic, have provided humans a seemingly endless number of benefits, from food to livelihood, education, transportation, and even emotional support. But this relationship also opens us up to zoonotic diseases, which can spill over from animals to humans. According to the CDC, 75% of new or emerging infectious diseases come from animals, the most notable example being COVID-19. Although officially the origin hasn't been confirmed, scientists strongly believe the virus originated and evolved from an animal before jumping over to humans. Although zoonotic diseases are known and very common, what's been difficult over the years is assessing the likelihood of spilling over to humans and ultimately the risk of becoming a pandemic. That's now about to change. Using artificial intelligence, researchers at UC Davis have created a new tool to better understand these emerging viruses and prioritize which ones pose the greatest risk of jumping from animals to us, with the goal of better preparing for future pandemics. Joining us now to tell us more about this innovative tool is Dr. Pranav Pandit, a veterinary epidemiologist at UC Davis and lead researcher on the project. Dr. Pandit, welcome to Insight.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So your research focuses on ecology of emerging infectious diseases. That's basically how organisms relate and affect one another. I would imagine that leads to like endless possibilities with pretty exciting finds.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting field, especially to me personally. I'm really excited to working on emerging infectious diseases. And what we really do is like try to understand how these zoonotic diseases actually are transmitted between animal population, within animal populations, and really try to understand the factors that kind of lead to eventually the transmission to human beings. And it might be due to climate change or any other large scale changes that we do in the nature that might help those pathogens to spill over into humans. So just trying to understand those factors and understanding the mechanisms behind that is what the research is, what we do.
As a veterinary epidemiologist, I mean, obviously we know that COVID-19 isn't the only coronavirus. What has made COVID-19 and its subvariants similar and at the same time very different from other coronaviruses that you've studied?
Right. I think in itself, human coronaviruses are very different from each other. So there are about 7 human coronaviruses that we know, at least, including SARS-CoV-2, the COVID-19 virus. Within those, even like all those viruses are different. Like, I guess 4 of them, they cause not such a severe disease. They are low pathogenic and they generally just tend to be endemic in human populations. While 3 others, like SARS-CoV-2, the SARS, the first SARS virus, and MERS, they really cause like acute diseases, like severe diseases in humans. So even within humans, they are very different. And in general, if you look at the virus family for coronaviruses, which is called as coronaviridae, it's a really highly diverse virus family. It does have 5 genera within that, and they tend to infect all different kinds of animals, including birds. There are very well-studied domestic animal diseases, including diseases of poultry, dogs, cats, pigs, and they also infect quite a lot of wild birds, including some species and some interesting even marine mammals. Hmm. So it's a quite a diverse group of viruses. But the coronaviruses that we are kind of studying are actually novel coronaviruses. These are the coronaviruses that have been recently discovered in wildlife. And we are trying to understand what risk they pose to human beings. Can they even infect wide variety of animal species? Or if they can infect wide variety of animal species, can they infect human beings? So that's the research that we are doing.
Given that zoonotic diseases, I mean, the CDC believes like 75% are zoonotic diseases. So if we know that and there's an established history with viruses spilling over from animals to humans, why is the risk and the evolutionary history very limited?
Right. I wouldn't say the the knowledge about human coronaviruses or in general coronaviruses is limited, but there is so much to explore and so much to understand. Like even within the known human coronaviruses, we do know for some of them the possible reservoir hosts, but we still don't know what exact mechanisms caused them to eventually spill over into humans, what really happened during those times. So that's still there for us to explore and understand, including things like what were some of the intermediate hosts, were there any intermediate hosts that helped amplify those viruses and then eventually help transmission into human beings. So,
well, you envisioned and you created a tool, you and your colleagues, in creating essentially a system which prioritizes new and known viruses for their risk of passing over between animals and humans. Help us visualize how this works.
Absolutely. So what we did was basically, since the aim was to understand the risk that these novel viruses will pose to human beings, we actually looked at a well-recognized known zoonotic and non-zoonotic viruses. We eventually created a big database of those viruses and their known vertebrate hosts, like all the species, animal species that these viruses are known to infect, including human beings. And then we used a network approach, basically created a network of viruses that are interconnected with each other, just like let's say a social network for viruses that are sharing host between each other, and developed some artificial intelligence models, some machine learning models that help us predict the missing links within that network. And those missing links eventually help us quantify the zoonotic risk that they pose to human beings.
Where does artificial intelligence come into this in terms of assisting in understanding the risk of a zoonotic disease passing over into humans and also potentially causing a pandemic?
Right. I think in general, right now, artificial intelligence and machine learning models it's an exciting time for researchers like me. It's going to play a really important role in understanding the pandemic risk that novel viruses or very well-known viruses pose to human beings, especially because the field itself has become really data-driven. We are generating a lot of data around surveillance in wildlife, surveillance in domestic animals, surveillance in humans, and just the movement of animals, movement of people, climate change, all these things are really rich in data. We are just collecting a lot of data. And that's where like some of these machine learning models do really well in kind of identifying the mechanisms, the drivers behind a specific virus's distribution and all those things. So it's really exciting time for researchers like us who use machine learning. Yeah.
If you had this tool before 2020, how would it have been useful for COVID-19?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it would have been really useful, at least what we have been able to, during our study, what we have been able to understand is that the model was actually even really good in identifying or having a high prioritization score for viruses that were already, that we know are zoonotic in nature. So I'm just imagining that the model would have also predicted to have higher prioritization score for a virus, something like COVID-19. Mm. Yeah.
I'm curious about the monkeypox outbreak, although not classified as a pandemic, but this is a zoonotic virus that resembles smallpox. It was first discovered in 1970, so more than 50 years ago, according to the World Health Organization. Would this tool have been useful in curbing the current spread that we're experiencing?
Right. Probably not this specific tool, because this specific tool, we already know that monkeypox is zoonotic in nature. Mm-hmm. This tool tries to understand whether a disease that we don't know yet whether it will be a zoonotic disease or not will be zoonotic in nature. Although there are some models that do try to identify, machine learning models that do try to identify where and when some of these diseases might emerge. And that would have been really useful to kind of implement those and understand the risk monkeypox pose for a pandemic threat.
What do zoonotic diseases like coronaviruses, what makes them, I guess, arguably more savvy in actually spreading and creating a pandemic.
Right. I think the early research that our group is doing is able to identify that especially viruses that do tend to infect wide variety of species. Let's say a virus is infecting bats as well as is able to infect rodents or other a large number of mammal species. They tend to have eventually become zoonotic. They tend to have higher likelihood of becoming becoming zoonotic in the future. So I think some of those things kind of prep those viruses really well. Along with that, having an opportunity, an ecological or epidemiological opportunity to eventually get exposed to human beings and then have an ability to infect people is what all drives in the emergence of novel viruses.
Yeah, and the timeliness as well, because your models use data from more than 500 new viruses that were discovered in just a span of a decade, 2009 to 2019. What can you tell us about these viruses?
Right. So actually, the project identified more than 900 novel viruses.
Also close to double that number.
Yeah, but just the model was able to develop significant predictions for about 531 novel viruses out of those. And all those viruses have been detected all across the world, in Latin America, in Africa, in Southeast Asia, and in wildlife species that are in close association with human beings. So in agriculture fields, in bat caves that are frequently used by human beings, or in market value chains where animals are sold and bought and all those things. So these wild animals are already in very close association with human beings. And that's where we have found all these viruses.
I'm curious with COVID-19, because it is a zoonotic disease, but in the last, two plus years, there's also transmission back into the animal population, like deer and rodents, I believe even, domestic animals like cats. What does that tell us, especially with the risk of a new variant emerging?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, that's where we have to again start doing surveillance in animals. And just the circulation of COVID back into, like, circulation of COVID-19 in these animal populations increases the chances of emergence of a new variant, because then the virus gets an opportunity to multiply and evolve into something new that can again spill back into humans, for which we probably might not have enough immunity. So all those things really matter a lot. So kind of for a long-term prevention and control of COVID-19, we really need to know how the virus is also circulating in multiple animal species and in wildlife.
Yeah, so essentially this back and forth between humans and animals creates more opportunities for this virus to evolve into more subvariants.
Absolutely, yeah.
You really just briefly touched upon this at the beginning of our conversation, but I want to dive into it. How does climate change and just increased environmental degradation complicate and perhaps increase the need for this type of research?
Yeah, I mean, climate change, like it's we know that it's going to affect the species distribution, including distribution of some of the vectors that transmit some of these viruses. And that's going to change a lot of background populations of these species that harbor some of these viruses. And some of these species might increase human contacts due to pressures that they are feeling due to climate change. And same with large-scale landscape changes that we are doing, either through deforestation or just through landscape changes that we can quickly do, let's say road building, building of dams. All these things kind of displace large-scale populations and might increase human contact with those wild species. And again, as I said earlier, it might increase our chances to share some of those viruses with them, and those viruses might get an opportunity to spill into humans. So as climate change happens, we're going to see more and more possible emergence of novel viruses, novel pathogens coming across And some of these models will be super useful to understand the early risks or early signals into that.
Yeah, this another system you're looking at is ranking another family of viruses. I mean, this family includes viruses like measles and mumps, respiratory tract infections. Why should these viruses be a concern? Because they're labeled as high priorities when there's vaccines for measles and mumps.
Right, yeah. Even though there are vaccines for measles and mumps, there are other viruses from the same family, like Paramyxoviridae, that are emerging in nature, like Nipah viruses, Hendra viruses. These are viruses that come from bats, and many other bat paramyxoviruses might eventually emerge again, similar to COVID-19. So even though we have vaccines for some of the viruses, there is a lot of other viruses that mm-hmm. we need to prioritize and increase our surveillance for from this virus
that family. Are highly contagious as well.
Yes, yeah.
You know, getting to the crux of understanding how COVID-19 emerged is pretretty paramount in preventing future zoonotic outbreaks from becoming pandemics, but the origin has been the subject of controversy, political finger pointing, misinformation, and that couldn't be underscored enough. But given that you're a researcher, what evidence do you have that strongly suggests that the virus spilled over from animals to humans in Wuhan?
Right. I think there are a couple of very interesting recent papers that came out right now, especially led by Dr. Anderson and his colleagues. And they shed a great light on the possible events that might have occurred in the very, very early days in the Huanan market in Wuhan in China. What they found is that the very early cases were within people or vendors that were selling wildlife. Within the market, and they also identify that there might be at least two different zoonotic spillovers that happened within the market, the Huanan market. Even though like the exact events are still pretty much clouded, but those are pretty strong indications that some of the emergence events really happened within the market in Wuhan City.
Dr. Pranav Pandit is a veterinary epidemiologist at UC Davis. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
And for your research.
Yeah.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.